You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. I want to dig into the other big healthcare story of the week, Ebola, and the economics behind it, plus some of the other news that grabbed our attention. So this week, we asked a doctor to join us for brunch. We are out having brunch in New York at the Pullman Kitchen on 2nd Avenue, and I am joined this week by Celine Gounder, who is a doctor and infectious disease specialist, also writes a number of articles, most recently for Reuters, and Ben Walsh, who is a business and finance reporter for the Huffington Post. Welcome to you both.
Thanks.
I want to start, since, Celine, we have you here, let's talk about Ebola, but really the money and business behind it. I think a lot of Americans watching what is happening in West Africa and watching what's happening in the U.S. want to know why there isn't a vaccine and how that whole process works anyway.
Right. Well, pharmaceutical companies are not going to invest in a drug or vaccine for a disease that's so rare. Up until this outbreak of Ebola in West Africa, there have been sporadic outbreaks, but never very big, you know, a couple dozen cases at the most. And so why would you, if you're Merck or Pfizer or one of these companies, spend millions of dollars developing something for which there's no market?
And I think if you look at that, it can seem so heartless, and yet I guess that's sort of the business model of the pharmaceutical industry?
It is. And this is where the government does step in. We have certain things, what we call orphan drugs. So orphan drugs are medications that are for rare diseases. So the government steps in these situations where you have essentially a market failure to help pay for the research and development of drugs and vaccines. In the case of Ebola, much of the funding has come from the NIH, but even more importantly, from the Department of Defense.
Really?
And the reason is that soldiers are the ones, you know, among Americans who are actually at risk. They're the ones that go to these countries for various different reasons, peacekeeping missions, et cetera. And they're the ones that are at risk. It's for the same reason we have an anthrax vaccine, and that's really something that was developed by the military for the military.
Ben, you've watched the stock market, and you watch the way investors react. We saw this run-up in the stocks of these pharmaceutical companies. Do you think investor interest plays any role here?
In terms of short-term, no, not at all.
Really?
There's no, or in terms of actually helping people who have Ebola or who protecting populations, investor interest, no, not really. Because, you know, these companies are not getting any sort of cash infusion because their stock price has gone up. And it's really just sort of speculation that one of these small companies that's tinkering with something might have something for some unforeseen reason. So it's really just a kind of a very out of the money long odds bet.
I want to turn to a larger economic story that, Ben, I'd like you to weigh in on, which is the Forbes 400, right? So it's a measure of the richest people out there. And back when it started, 1982, about 4% of the people were from finance. Now it's 20%.
Yeah.
That blows my mind, but I also think it says something about the economy as a whole. What does it tell you?
It's a pretty crystallized example for the runaway wealth of the 0.1% that we've seen in the last decade and a half. And it's just a very clear indication that the way to make the most money in the American economy right now is to be some way connected to financial markets.
Does that stay static, though? I mean, you know, is finance the thing? Or when we look at this 30 years from now, is it going to be like, oh, man, we all should have gotten on the hover ship boomlet back in 2014? Do either of you see anything else out there? I mean, what's the job that we're not thinking about that's going to land somebody else on that list? I don't know.
IT.
IT?
That's what I would think, yeah.
Yeah. Is it tech? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, if someone developed some sort of cold fusion reactor to provide.
So it's the plot of the Saint?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically, if I had to guess, I would say 20 years from now, the Forbes list is going to be, or Fortune list is going to be filled with hedge fund guys and bankers, and then people who basically make their money from, like, science fiction plots.
All right, I want to get weird. There are entertainment things that are happening that I think are amazing. So Netflix is getting into the feature film business, right? They've been dominating television. They're actually making feature films. So Adam Sandler is inking deals with them. And this Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon movie that they are doing as well. They're blowing up the movie business. Are we just not going to go to the movies anymore? When was the last time either of you went to a movie theater, by the way?
last week.
Really?
Yeah.
You went to the movies?
New York Film Festival, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay, you? When have you gone to a movie, Walsh?
Most recently, I think, was a couple of months ago, and I can't even remember what I saw.
See, yeah.
But the weird thing is I watch a lot of movies.
On Netflix?
But yeah, Netflix, Hulu, iTunes, HBO. So they're really, like, that's the thing is that American media consumption has, like, gone up dramatically. It's just where we do it is different.
Well, my husband and I used to see maybe 30, 40 movies a year in the theater, and now it's probably more like a dozen that we actually see in the theater. A lot of what we do is the live streaming at home. Between Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, etc., on demand, I mean, you kind of have what you want there. Plus, you have your wine, your cheese, your pets, your
right,
whatever.
You're not buying like an $8 thing of, you know, whatever candy it is.
Okay, how do you do this, though?
How is anyone going to make a Tetris movie? There's a Tetris movie coming out. That is the little L-shaped figurine. Is that the star? Or the one that has three little pokey dudes that you rotate? I don't understand how this works.
No, the brand name is the star. And I think that's the key, is that when you think about like the Lego movie, you would have thought, well, how do you make a movie out of
Lego?
Okay,
but that has pseudo people.
What's going to be the plot? Who knows? And so the key here, I think, is that it's a smart way to cut through the kind of cultural noise out there. You have a nostalgic brand. You say, we're making a Tetris movie. It gets all of us saying, well, what the hell is a Tetris movie going to be? And then,
like we're doing right now.
And
well,
then
I could see a Tetris movie where, I mean, I can remember being in college and my friends sitting around, we'd be sort of playing Tetris. And I could see sort of that kind of thing being built around the game. I don't know. To me, that would be more interesting.
Is there a piece you feel like you could really empathize with?
The L, I suppose.
The L. Yeah, I'm okay with it. Or that long one that if you were really going badly and you hit it wrong, then it filled up and you're toast.
But it could also save you. You could build up like a 6-row thing and then
you
it
drop
just,
it right in
right
and
here,
then bam,
boom,
you've won.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much to you both, Ben Walsh, Celine Gounder. Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks.
Thank you. Cheers.